Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon. Great to have you here with us on the Andy Price Show. We appreciate you choosing us this afternoon. So we've been listening to Josh Hawley as he questions Amy Coney Barrett. We wanted to bring it to you in its entirety. So we have it paused in the middle. Laura says, as she's watching on the Andy Fry YouTube page, Josh Hawley is smart and strategic in his approach, makes his points so well. Well done, Senator. Let's listen in here and hear more of the questioning from Senator Josh Hawley to Amy Coney Barrett.
With Section 230, because it seems to me that in the closely related antitrust context, we have seen over a period of many years courts substitute their economic judgment in many cases for what the words of statutes actually say and what perhaps the fairest interpretation of statutes might actually be. And whether it's Section 230 or the antitrust laws, one effect of this is to see growing concentrations of power in this country economically that I think are very significant threats to the ongoing operation of our democracy, to the basic ability of the people to control the levers both of the economy and of culture and of government. And I'm afraid I think that the courts have some role in this in much the way that Justice Thomas suggested in his dissent from denial yesterday. And I think it's hard to ignore it in the antitrust context as well. So I won't ask for your view on this because these are cases, these are issues that you very may well be called upon to weigh in on. I hope that you are. But I hope that you will give these issues consideration and the I think very well taken warning of Justice Holmes in Lochner. I think perhaps that insight has been lost sight of in many cases by both Republican appointees and Democrat appointees over many years on the Supreme Court in a variety of areas. Let me transition to one other area of law that's very important, back to the First Amendment and to the free exercise of religion. You had an interesting free exercise case recently. You were on the panel. You didn't write the decision. This is the Pritzker case. Illinois Republican Party versus Pritzker, decided on September 3rd of this year. So it's quite recent. It was just last month. This is a case in which the governor of the state was sued because, in the words now of the opinion I'm quoting, his executive order relating to COVID lockdowns, quote now, exhibits special solicitude for the free exercise of religion. And the case, in a roundabout way, challenge that special solicitude for churches and religious organizations. You joined the opinion in full. You didn't dissent. Can you say why you joined the opinion and why you think that the content here is right, why the holding is correct?
Sure. So in that case, the Illinois Republican Party said that because the executive order in Illinois had given an exception for the free exercise of religion, for example, so that people could gather at churches or synagogues or mosques, that same special protection had to extend to the Illinois Republican Party and, indeed, by logical extension, to everyone, so that the whole order would fall, because religion couldn't be singled out for special treatment, and that right to free speech, free assembly, etc., that it was, under First Amendment doctrine, a content-based distinction that could not survive. And what that opinion said about that is that it was permissible for the governor of Illinois to carve out an exception for free exercise, and that doing so didn't compel the government to extend the same protection to everyone. As Judge Wood said, you know, very well in that opinion, trying to accommodate a right explicitly mentioned in the Constitution and the First Amendment did not put the COVID order in jeopardy.
And the opinion is very firm on this point. You quote from the Hosanna Tabor case, which you and I discussed a little bit yesterday, unanimous case from the Supreme Court. This is the opinion quoting from that case. The First Amendment itself gives special solicitude to the rights of religious organizations. That's the Hosanna Tabor case. This opinion that you joined goes on to say there can be no doubt that the First Amendment singles out the free exercise of religion for special treatment. Rather than being a mechanism for expressing views, as the speech, press, assembly, and petition guarantees are, the free exercise clause is content-based, as you just said. The mixture of speech and music and ritual and readings and dress that contribute to the exercise of religions the world over is greater than the sum of its parts. In other words, what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, what I understand the panel to be saying is the free exercise of religion isn't reducible to the free exercise of speech. It isn't reducible to the free exercise of assembly. Those are important rights. Those are also protected by the First Amendment. But the free exercise of religion protects something different and more. It protects the rights of religious people and religious organizations of all backgrounds the world over, but of course in this country for Americans. It protects them and gives them special solicitude under the First Amendment. Have I got that correct?
Yes, to be clear, I can't take credit for the eloquent language. That was Judge Wood's language on the panel opinion that I did join. Yes, but the point that the panel opinion makes is that the free exercise of religion is singled out for its own protection in the First Amendment rather than being a subset of speech. And the position that the Illinois Republican Party took in that case would have been more putting everything under the speech umbrella.
And why do you think that is an important point of constitutional law? If I could ask you to put on your, I'm not asking you to comment on cases, but if you could put on your constitutional scholar hat, why is it significant that the First Amendment gives special solicitude, as this decision says, as the Supreme Court has repeatedly said, special solicitude to the rights of religious associations, religious believers, religious worship and exercise?
I think that case itself, the Illinois Republican case, shows why the distinction can matter, because as our panel held in that case, the outcome may have been different if we had been treating it solely as a free speech question, because the court has said that content-based distinctions, you know, under the First Amendment get strict scrutiny and it can be hard to satisfy. But so the case might have come out differently had it only been speech at issue. The case came out as it did because free exercise was also at issue.
I think in this time when we see many challenges to the rights of religious organizations, their ability to meet freely, and where frankly we see many instances around the country where religious organizations are treated, religious churches, synagogues, mosques are treated less favorably than secular counterparts, whether that's casinos or gyms or liquor stores, you name it. But so many different executives around this country have chosen to single out churches for disfavor, whether it's in the COVID context, which is what this case is about, or another context. I think that the holding of this opinion is very, very significant. And the Supreme Court's doctrine on this line of cases about the rights and the special solicitude, in the court's words, for religious organizations is very, very significant. I'll just conclude by saying, Judge Barrett, that it's been a privilege to get to speak with you these last couple of days. Congratulations to your family and to Jesse. And I think you have been, your answers to these questions have been really, really exceptional. I have been extremely impressed, and I was impressed to begin with. And I just want to put a finer point on something that Senator Sasse said earlier. He said, you know, you exercise your rights of assembly and free exercise and free speech when you were a faculty member. We've talked about that at length in various positions you took. And he pointed out there's nothing wrong with that. You shouldn't be penalized for it. I just want to agree with the chairman that I think there's nothing wrong with confirming to the Supreme Court of the United States a devout Catholic pro-life Christian, and it will be my privilege to vote for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Barrett.
Senator Josh Hawley there commenting also on what Ben Sasse said earlier. I thought he was going to maybe go in and give the Cardinals or the Royals a little extra love there, but he didn't. Always interesting to hear his setup, and it's funny the way he started his initial questioning off with a hypothetical about a hypothetical vice president who hypothetically had a family member put into a position of prominence and hypothetically used that that placement for special access or special privilege. And she's like, I'm not going to answer hypotheticals. And I was like, he doesn't need you to. Everything that needs to be said has been said. It's interesting to see a lot of this news coming in right now regarding the Hunter Biden stuff. Ryan, how are you? Like, you're unimpressed by this. It seems like your off air reaction to this is like meh. I'm not.
No, I'm not saying I'm unimpressed by it. The problem here is that we're seeing that the relationship between Biden and possibly Obama and the whole administration, between them and Hunter Biden and Burisma, was a lot cozier than we knew it to be. And it's in direct contrast to what Joe Biden has said all along, which is that he had no business in his son's business. Mm. That is a complete lie at this point.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
And I think something that will be, it will be flushed out. We'll see how the mainstream media decides to cover this. I would go to, you know, your usuals on Fox and Wolf Blitzer, of course, the Republican mm-hmm. apologist, to get your latest news on this. Fox News reported just within the last hour that the Biden camp has hit back at Hunter Biden email report suggesting then VP met with Burisma executives. According to Fox News, the Biden campaign hit back Wednesday after the New York Post reported the newly uncovered emails suggested Hunter Biden introduced his father, then the vice president, to a top executive at Ukrainian natural gas firm Burisma Holdings in 2015 at Hunter's request. The emails turned up in the hard drive of a laptop dropped off at a repair shop in 2019, the Post reported, adding that a copy of the hard drive ended up in the hands of Robert Costello, a lawyer for Rudy Giuliani, a personal attorney for President Trump. Quote, investigations by the press during impeachment and even by two Republican-led Senate committees, whose work has decried as, quote, not legitimate and political by a GOP colleague, have all reached the same conclusion, that Joe Biden carried out official U.S. policy toward Ukraine and engaged in no wrongdoing. Trump administration officials have attested to these facts under oath, Biden campaign spokesman Andrew Bates said in a statement. So we're going to continue to watch as this stuff is coming out, because I think we said this a little bit earlier, the drip, drip, drip of something like this in an election season, certainly you have to think that there's going to be a process. You can't push everything out there at one time, because it will be so massive that the coverage of it is going to kind of get watered down. It's going to overwhelm people. And they're not going to follow it. It's the middle of October. This is the kind of October surprise you expect. Oh, but pandemic, RGB's passing, Amy Coney Barrett. What else is it? Oh, the president got COVID. I forgot that one. Whoops. So, I mean, it's a little overwhelming now for folks, right? So we're going to continue to try to watch this and get some reaction to it. And we're going to look into getting some experts who can kind of explain the lay of the land here. Tell us where this is going, and if this is a big deal, or if this is just a strike of a match and you see the fire and then it just kind of, you know, extinguishes itself in the wind. Stick around. We'll get more on this when we return, and we're going to pay attention as the testimony hearings should resume shortly. We'll see who's up and bring you the highlights as we continue to move through this day. Stick around. A lot more Annie Fry Show headed your way.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. You know, we could have a DJ that would be accompanying the hearing. It could be techno, it could be rap beats, it could be some hot, sick beats in the background. It would mm-hmm. change the entire vibe of the entire country. Everybody would tune in. You know, if all of a sudden some techno hit and Lindsey Graham gets up and starts grooving, I want to see that. Oh. I do.
Yeah.
It would be good for it. It would be good for America, right?
Oh, God.
Heck yeah.
What kind of moves do you think Josh Hawley has? Katie, you're a Josh Hawley fan.
I can't imagine it. The whole thing makes me uncomfortable.
What does Josh Hawley dance like?
I don't know this. He does the fingers on his eyes.
John Travolta. Yes. What's that movie called?
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
I don't know.
You it think just, that's well, how Josh Hawley dances?
I don't. I could not think of anything else. I don't think he shakes his butt at all.
Ryan, how does Amy Klobuchar dance?
Amy Klobuchar doesn't dance. She just shakes her head a little bit.
I don't know about that. I bet it's very aggressive. I bet she is all out and having a good time. Mm-hmm. She seems as though she's dramatic.
What's that one move where you put your hands on your knees and then you cross them? Like,
isn't that the Charleston?
That's what she's doing. That's what Amy's doing.
You cross your hands or your legs?
Either one.
Yeah, they go back and forth. I
tell
you what,
the best dancer on the Judiciary Committee?
Oh gosh.
Oh man, Kristen Sinema.
She's not on the Judiciary.
on the committee. Okay, not
welcome
just, okay.
to.
Hello.
Here, I'll put them up here and we can go through. Who is the best dancer of everybody on the Judiciary Committee here?
Oh, well, Cory Booker for sure.
He could be a good dancer.
Yeah, I think he'd be
Lindsey
a great
Graham,
dancer.
Dianne Feinstein, Chuck Grassley. I don't know.
Chuck
could be
Grassley.
A sleeper. Patrick Leahy. Yeah. I want to see it happen. John Cornyn, Dick Durbin, Mike Lee, Sheldon Whitehouse. I bet Sheldon Whitehouse gets down. You know what I'm saying? Ted Cruz, Amy Klobuchar, Ben Sasse.
Senator Richard Blumenthal. That's my choice.
Yes, Josh Hawley, yes. Tom Tillis, Maisie Hirono. I bet she can get her freak on a little bit. Joni Ernst, Cory Booker, Mike Crapo, Kamala Harris.
Kennedy. Oh.
I've seen Kamala Harris dance, and it makes me mad. Just the fact that image is in my brain. John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. It's him.
Marsha Blackburn. It's funny how, like, I feel like Republicans don't dance as well as, like, there's no way that the Republicans dance better than the Democrats.
No.
Can you imagine if this question got asked on the actual Senate floor and they said, well, then let's find out, everyone.
And then
a beat just dropped out of
let
heaven.
Let the beat drop. No, I mean, seriously, though, do you feel like, if you were going to put the Democrats up against the Republicans, don't you think the Democrats are going to be better dancers?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I think the Republicans would surprise us.
You think John Kennedy's got something he's holding off on?
I think Ted Cruz specifically has probably taken some sort of formal dance lesson that nobody knows about.
Did you see you know how Jim Carrey is an artiste? Have you seen any of his paintings?
Yes, yes, I have.
Ted yes, Cruz they're painful.
And I'm wondering Jim if anybody Carrey. Has paid any money.
Oh,
for
I'm
any
sure.
Of those
I'm sure they have, just because it's Jim Carrey. But
I mean, so Jim Carrey paints these things.
They are.
Please tune in right now to the Facebook Live or the YouTube Live.
You can see the
because,
pain in his heart.
Because here's a picture of
oh my gosh,
Jim Carrey. Did this. It says Ted Cruz Hellbound Class of 2020, and it's basically a picture of Ted Cruz as Satan. So Ted Cruz says, say what you like about Jim Carrey, you have to admit he's a talented artist. And
that's
then there is a
nice
later
of
follow-up of Ted Cruz from this one, and he legit requested a copy of this portrait for his office.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, like, that's a scary looking portrait, right?
That looks less like Ted Cruz and more just like Satan.
Ryan, you need to explain to the people what this portrait looks like.
It's just a fully red painting with shades of yellow and black that make it look like a Satan head.
It does not look like Ted Cruz.
It doesn't really look like Ted Cruz.
Begging
so
does
question,
that mean he's not a good artist?
No. I said going
here's
into
a picture
this,
of Satan / Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Here's a picture of actual Satan. Here's a picture of Jim Carrey's Satan. You make your mind up.
Could you imagine? Oh my gosh, that is going to haunt me. Could you imagine
like
hating people that you don't know that much? really, I mean, really genuinely hating
people
that you
don't
know.
There's pain in this man's heart, and it comes out in these pictures. It's kind of sad. It's not just this one. All of them just make me sad for him.
We were talking about this in a meeting after the show yesterday. Why is Ace Ventura playing Joe Biden on SNL? I mean, seriously, I've only seen bits and pieces, and I'm not... comedy, when I know that it's bore out of hatred, is not funny to me. It is sad, to your point, Ryan. It's like when you are watching somebody and they're trying to land jokes, and you know it's because they just absolutely have a burning hatred for what they're talking about, their subject matter. It's not funny. Same thing along with Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump. There is so much. It is such rich, fertile ground to caricaturize Donald Trump on SNL. And when I watched Will Ferrell do W. Bush, it was funny. There was a humor to it that was relatable, that didn't seem as though it was just intentionally to destroy and destruct. And when you would watch Dana Carvey do George Bush Sr. or Ross Perot, I think, didn't he do both of them?
I don't remember who did. Yeah, he did Ross Perot.
Actually, the story behind the Dana Carvey one, I remember seeing this in an interview on David Spade's show, which I recommend you folks check out if you haven't yet. But they were talking about that. And I think that Dana Carvey was supposed to do a debate with Ross Perot in it, possibly. And when they were practicing, Dana Carvey was being George Bush, but he was like, no, he was telling the actor who was doing Ross Perot, no, you need to do it like this. No, you need to do it like that. And then finally they're like, all right, Dana, you're just doing it all. like that poor actor lost his job because the way that Dana Carvey was directing it within the practice of the scene, it was just funnier.
It's funny that you liked Will Ferrell doing George W. Bush, because I felt like that was the turn where you're talking about, where everything before that, anybody who did Bill Clinton did it with love, even because everything going on in Bill Clinton's term was just so crazy that it was ripe for comedy. But I felt like Will Ferrell hated George W. Bush, and he was funny, but there was a lot of animosity in everything that I felt like when I watched it.
I mean, George W. Bush was a flawed man from, you know, he's an alcoholic. Like I read most of his biography, and is a really big book, but listening to George W. Bush's story and some struggles that he had, I think he was very human and relatable in a way that Republicans in my lifetime hadn't really been. I mean, Ronald Reagan was like some sort of, you know, just a caricature of a Republican. Like he was the father figure that America needed. Yeah, not so much with George W. Bush. You know, he wasn't as flawless. You know, the word strategery has gone down in history. And strategery was something that my recollection is that Will Ferrell said. Did George W. Bush ever actually say that?
If he did, he might have been quoting Will Ferrell, or he was saying it in jest. I don't think he ever actually said it.
Well, we were having a conversation just the other day about Lisa Murkowski. And if Lisa Murkowski votes against Amy Coney Barrett to confirm her to the Supreme Court, Sarah Palin has said that she is going to primary Lisa Murkowski, I think in 2 years, for the Alaska Senate seat. And we were discussing this with a coworker of ours, and they said, is Sarah Palin still going to say stupid things like I can see, or can she still see Russia from her house? And he was joking when he said that. But I mean, that's the first thing that people think about when they see Sarah Palin. Mm-hmm. I truly do believe that Sarah Palin, in my estimation, was the turning point where it became... The balance tipped into more hatred and activism. It's more about the activism. You want to actually change the course of events in a real political situation more than you want to make people laugh. And SNL is supposed to be a relief for people. You're supposed to be able to tune in and laugh at the things that are so funny because they're true. It's not supposed to be group therapy for political hate. And that's what it is right now. I've seen David Spade. It's so funny to me. The 90s SNL cast right now, if you're not following them on Twitter, do it. If you've got John Lovitz, you've got David Spade, you have Adam Sandler, mm-hmm. you have Rob Schneider.
Norm MacDonald.
Is too. Another Norm MacDonald. Norm MacDonald was the one who tipped that off. I mean, there's five people off the top of my head. None of them that I know of have come out and been like, you need to vote for Donald Trump. But they're all like, this ish is crazy. Like, look around you. This is not how you want to exist. Adam Sandler, not as much. But Adam Sandler is a huge supporter, had been a huge supporter of Rudy Giuliani and has had donated to Republicans in the past. And you know, when you, especially when you listen to stand-up comedy these days, there's such a powerful thing in stand-up comedy because they're the ones who are not cloaked in political correctness. They are the ones who get to say what other people don't get to say. And when you look at comedy, stand-up comedy, the most mainstream that stand-up comedy is supposed to get is really SNL because it's on your network TV. It's as edgy as it gets on Saturday Night Live without having to be a pay-per-view, you know, mature rating on Netflix or whatever. It's one of the things that I miss about Netflix the most is I love watching stand-up comedians that I've never heard of before that maybe other people have heard of and like and diving into it because they give you such a smack in the face of realism. Whether you agree with it or not, Bill Burr was one of the people who I had, I don't know if I watched Bill Burr, Katie, because of you, or I don't really remember how I ended up stumbling upon watching one of his full stand-ups. But my mind was blown by some of the things he was willing to say. And the truth of the matter was, regarding the points that he was making, when he got done with his stand-up, I had no idea who he was going to vote for, or if he even was going to vote. This past weekend, we haven't talked about this yet because we've been talking about the hearing quite a bit. This past weekend, Bill Burr was the, was he the host of SNL?
Yes.
I guess?
Yes, he was.
Because he did the opening act. And he gave it was jarring the things he was saying in his opening monologue, calling out woke culture and the people who are leading this woke culture the most. It blew my mind. Jaw dropped the whole time I was watching it, taking it in. And we're going to play it for you when we come back. Stick around. We're going to be back in just a minute. We'll listen to Bill Burr. We'll get some of reaction about this as well. And it looks like Senator Blumenthal is questioning Amy Coney Barrett right now. We're going to listen in and see if there are any key moments that we're going to bring to you regarding that. We also have, let's see here. I got to get this, get my list up. The last time we looked at this, we were deciding who was going to be the best dancer among these people. Back to business. Tom Tillis, Maisie Hirono, Joni Ernst, Cory Booker, Mike Crapo, Kamala Harris, John Kennedy, Marsha Blackburn. That's the lineup after Blumenthal. So we'll see. We'll see who we all get to. They get 20 minutes apiece. We're going to play that Bill Burr stand-up for you when we get back. And hold on to your butts if you haven't heard this yet, because it is amazing stuff. Back in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Every time we play a song, I change my mind about what kind of music we should have at this dance party that we have during the confirmation hearings. Leave us up. Now imagine the senators again. Who you got? Who's the first one that comes to your mind?
To this song, it's John Kennedy. That's the first one. Just like,
what does he do? How does
like
he do
this? With his shoulders? It's not a shimmy, but it's like a shoulder bob.
I just picture all of them, like, cameras off. Okay, this is what they do anyway. This isn't like a weird thing. Cameras go off, and this is what happens. You're doing the wave hand thing.
No, isn't that what's that movie I never saw that everybody saw?
Moulin Rouge? I don't know.
No, word of that movie. No, the one with the nerd in the school and the curly hair, Pedro.
Oh, Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah. That's a good
Doesn't
one.
Doesn't he do this?
Yep, he does.
Yeah.
He's like squatting kind of funny, like waves his arm like he's doing the fish with his arm.
He's wearing the snow boots.
Brad says Kennedy, 100%. So they're going with that. People, let us know. Of the Judiciary Committee, who would be the best answer? I think that Josh Hawley should come on the show and defend why he is the best answer.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I'll put in an email.
So if you want to request on Twitter that Senator Josh Hawley come on the Annie Frye Show, I wouldn't be upset about that. Be nice and kind. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Bill Burr. So if you don't know Bill Burr, Katie, you love Bill Burr.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
I think you tipped me off to him in the first place.
Just I'll give take credit for that.
give people a little precursor. What's the Bill Burr story? Which is different than Bill Barr.
Yes, yes. He's just a stand-up comic. He's really funny. He has these kind of outrageous ideas that aren't really outrageous, but they are in today's culture. I just was telling Ryan, Ryan has this saying that I think is just great. And it's like all of a sudden these common sense values and this common sense mindset is now linked with conservatism when it's just people thinking with their brain. And that's kind of what Bill Burr's thing is all about. Like all of these ridiculous things are happening in the world. And how are we sitting here saying that they're not ridiculous? And
is he conservative?
He's never said his political party. He's never said what...
He just doesn't toe the line, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that, I mean, comedy is supposed to be shocking. And in that regard, Bill Burr speaking common sense with things that may potentially have an undertone, I won't say of conservatism as much as common sense, maybe even libertarianism. This is his part of his stand-up, which got a lot of flack this past Saturday on SNL.
The way white women somehow hijack the woke movement, generals around the world should be analyzing this. Just to refresh your memory, the woke movement was supposed to be about people of color, not getting opportunities, the at-bats that they deserved, finally making that happen. And it was about that for about 8 seconds. And then somehow, white women swung their Gucci-booted feet over the fence of oppression and stuck themselves at the front of the line. I don't know how they did it. I've never heard so much complaining in my life from white women. My anger to her, with my SUV in my heated seat. You have no idea what it's like to be me.
Oh, check out a stand-up. It's
I
great.
I love my heated seats. I mean, he's not wrong. In some capacity, he's not wrong. And I got to tell you, I feel like, because I've been thinking this thought for a while, like what is with the aggressive elitist nature of the white female leading of what is going on in this woke world? Like it's bizarre how it's the most important thing in the lives of some of these women. Well, maybe they have a personal experience that has disposed them to being, you know, so passionate about this. I think that maybe my original thought stemmed from watching a Bill Burr stand-up. I'm not 100% sure. But when you look at what Bill Burr is saying there, and he's willing to say it out loud, it's like when you hear somebody else say something that you're thinking, and again, I don't know if my first thought about this didn't actually originally come from him, and it's just come full circle, but if he's saying it out loud, other people have to think there has to be another person out there, at least one, who's thinking it. You know, I'm saying it, you're all just thinking it. I cannot imagine a scenario where there isn't a large enough portion of people in this country who are like, this is kind of weird, isn't it? And I don't understand why, being a white woman myself, I don't feel like I am given any sort of privilege to speak to anybody or tell anybody when they can speak. And so much so, I haven't talked about this in a while. You guys know that I have a passion for Disney World. I watch a lot of YouTube Disney stuff that talks about, you know, things going on at the park, or especially now, like things that are opening, things that are not going to open, the 28,000 cast members that are losing their job. That has a lot to do with the fact that Disneyland, Gavin Newsom there, won't even open up Disneyland. But there is a specific vlogger that I used to watch who has just gone off the reservation in the wake of the protests that took place after George Floyd's death. And there's just this like animosity that just oozes through the screen when she like, I'm like, I am watching you to find out where to get the best Dole Whip. I'm watching you to find out which resort is your favorite to stay at and why. I am watching you to get tips and tricks about how to pack for Disney World with a family of five. This is why I'm watching you. And then all of a sudden, it's just been replaced by wokeness. And it's been replaced. There's just so much pretension in it. And as a communicator myself, you guys, I'm talking to you every day. If I take a hard turn and just decide that what we do here is going to be different, you are going to turn this show off so fast and you're not going to come back. And that's my fault. When you're communicating to people, you develop a relationship with them. It is a relationship built on trust that you're going to come to 97.1 between noon and 3, 11 to 3 this week, and you are going to be provided a conversation that you're going to know that it's going to be, you know, in this specific realm of discussion. If I showed up tomorrow and just started talking in a category of topics that was completely uninteresting to you or in the face of the purpose of why you come here in the first place, if I started doing a sports show, we talk about sports once a week for one segment because I have an interest in it. And I think that if there's news to talk about, we can do that for 10 minutes one time a week. And I like Kevin Wheeler. But I have a relationship with you that I am supposed to meet that expectation. This woke culture trumps everything. It is more important than everything. And in the midst of doing that, we are breaking our relationships with people who mean everything to us. Our family members, lifelong friends. No relationship is more important than making sure that your wokeness is 100% contagious to the person on the other end of that relationship. There's nothing more important to these people. It's so disgustingly sad. We're going to have a debate tomorrow. Or no. We're going to have town halls tomorrow night. We couldn't hold a debate, but we're going to have simultaneously town halls where Trump is going to be on NBC and Biden's going to be on ABC, I think. Or CBS or something. I don't know.
Trump's on NBC. I don't remember.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are they not debating one another? So tomorrow night, everybody will go to their respective corner. Everybody will listen to the person who they assume that they're going to vote for. And nothing will change. We don't talk to each other. We talk at each other. And I have seen this, to Bill Burr's point, I have seen this In a very suburban white female realm, I have seen this really grab a hold of people. I don't know if it's the heartstrings that are tugged at. I understand and I sympathize with the idea that I have been blessed in my life in ways that other people haven't. And I know that there are other people who have been blessed in ways that I haven't. And I can put myself in a position of sympathy and in some cases empathy, where all I want to do is pour my heart out to help people. And when you feel limited in your ability to do so, that is frustrating. That can actually cause anger to occur. That's certainly the way I feel when I'm talking about my pro-life stance. I want to adopt all the babies. I want to give a position of life to all of these children. And it's overwhelming to think about how ineffective my existence is regarding this issue that is really important to me. So I can relate to people who aren't in an oppressed category, potentially, just like I said earlier with the word preference and orientation. Now that I have heard this, I can understand why sexual preference and sexual orientation could mean different things to people who are experiencing a different walk of life than I am. I understand that. But you got to give me the benefit of the doubt that if I say the wrong word in that term, I'm not doing it to maliciously put you in your place. Most of us are not out there maliciously trying to put people in our place. We are trying to get through one crazy day to the next. And it is heavy. I mean, Katie, you and I have talked recently about how heavy this is right now.
Oh my gosh. I'm just like emotionally drained. I'm exhausted. I think we all are as a country. And I mean, honestly, I cannot wait to get to this election day. It's just been, every day just feels so much longer than the last. And what you just said is so true. We're just trying to make it. And I know we have differences of opinion. I know we all want to push our opinions out there on a constant basis to be heard. But my God, we are giving up friendships. We are giving up family in the name of what? To do what?
And I'll tell you this too. You're going to have real life stuff happen to you. It's happened to me. I have had a somewhat rough last 4 years in my life, just with various things drastically changing. And when you get to the point where you're at rock bottom, if you've lost something that's really super important to you, and it doesn't make sense as to why it happened, and you know that there were really, really dark forces behind causing something like that to happen to you, you take it really personally, you find yourself at rock bottom, then you start to reassess what's important to you in life. And it's always the people. It's always the people who are associated with you. It's your family. It's your friends. It's the people, you know, if you have faith, it's the people who you share that with. And don't get to that point. If life happens to you, make sure there are still people around, folks. That's what's really important. We're going to take a quick break. More coverage of the confirmation hearings also when we return. And we're going to continue to follow this Hunter Biden story as it develops. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.